I'm Lacey from Just One More Fix, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey friends, Jordan Woods Robinson here from AMC's The Walking Dead and Blue Man Group, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, grab some gluten-free non-GMO popcorn, and let's dive into the world pop culture bliss.
You're listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Everybody, this is Joe, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. And guys, look at this. We have Team PopX fully assembled tonight. Oh my gosh. Dude, what's up?
Full house. We got the whole crew tonight.
Oh my gosh.
Happy 2018.
Ooh, kicking off the year.
Cast.
Oh, snap. This is the first podcast of 2018. That's so cool, man. And you know, we started this out in like, what was it, Lindsay? Like 2016, something like that?
January of 2016. We are almost 2 years
Oh, this
old.
Is our 2-year anniversary. I got to figure
our
out.
Yeah, this month.
Oh my gosh, that is so crazy.
At the end of the month, our very first episode aired 2 years ago.
Wow.
Crazy.
That is unreal to think about.
And I have to give a shout out to our number one most loyalist follower, Luke, in the chat, has been with us since
day one.
Day one.
Yeah. It's no coincidence that his last name is Skywalker. So I'm just saying,
he is the chosen one.
He is. You are the chosen one.
Yes, and we've had many more wonderful friends come and hang out with us too.
Oh, yeah.
But I have to recognize him. He's been a very loyal listener and watcher of us every single time we are live.
Yeah,
I appreciate
awesome.
That.
And he says, "I think capes are going to make a fashionable comeback in 2018." So
I hope so.
No capes.
I like a cape. I like a cape.
The cape that keep you warm.
A cape crusader. Yes. Cape crusader. I would personally like to see a cape on Spider-Man. I think that would be awesome.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, like a spider web cape. There was actually one in the comics for a while. He had a little
weird. That would be really cool.
In that though. But you guys ready to get this thing kicked off? All right, let's do it. All right, so hey guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. Now, I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live here on PopX.live and come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
And I'm Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. If you missed episode 68, Star Wars episode 8 review, man, I missed that. But was it a great show? And I just,
you were still a part of it, Austin.
I was a part of it.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah. Got my 4 minutes in. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
if you guys missed that show, no, you go ahead. Go ahead, Lindsay. Go ahead, Lindsay.
We missed you live, but you had a darn good excuse.
let me just stop right there and say,
I never had an excuse for anything.
Congratulations, Austin Burke, on your nuptials and your amazing wedding. I think all of Team PopX and all of our viewers were living vicariously through your Instagram feeds. So we do thank you. Man, you guys looked so amazing. And
thank you.
Yeah, your bride is just, man, you did good. You did a good job.
No, listen, God bless us with an amazing wedding. Everything went swell. Nobody tripped and fell. There was a little bit of crying, some emotions that came out.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I got to see Star Wars, then I got married. That's, I mean, what a great 3-day span, right?
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah, but it was fantastic. And like I said, if you guys missed our show, please go check that out. And it was a great one. Great one to watch.
And you know you're a true nerd if your bachelor party is going that to was Star Wars.
Our bachelor party.
I saw that.
We ate Red Lobster, we watched Star Wars, and we fake sword fought in the parking lot.
Oh, that was magical. My
That's
gosh.
Awesome.
That was just downright magical.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you guys, if you haven't figured it out by now, I'm Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okey. And I'd like to help you remember that after this show, you need to go over to Google Play or iTunes. Make sure you subscribe and you review us with preferably 5 stars and say some really nice things about us so that we can get more people like you guys to come and enjoy our show.
Yes. Wow. I couldn't have said that better, Lindsay. I mean, it's almost like you've done this a while.
For like 2 years. I think I've got it down.
Oh my gosh. I still can't wrap my head around the fact it's crazy. Holy cow. That's crazy. Well, guys, we're going to go ahead and do some news, so don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
All right, so right here on PopXCast.com, we want to take a quick pause and say, if you're listening and tuning in right now live, wherever you may be in the world, be sure to share us over on Twitter, maybe do a live thing on Instagram, whatever you want to do, but help us get the word out, share it on your feeds, and then let us know that, hey, my buddies at Team PopX, they're live and they got a really great show tonight, so okay. But leaning off the news this week, and this is pretty cool stuff. I kind of skimmed over the news a little bit, and I was really excited to dive into this. Warner Brothers has tapped Walter Hamada to be the president of the production of DC films. Now, this is kind of a big change. There's some stuff going on here in the background, essentially overseeing the studio's comic book movies. Interesting.
All right.
And Hamada previously served as a production executive at New Line Films, helping that division of Warner Brothers produce the horror hits like It, The Conjuring, one of my favorite horror film franchises ever.
Yes.
And so naturally, Hamada has ties to Aquaman and Conjuring director James Wan. James Wan, of course, has a movie in the theaters right now, Insidious Chapter 4, The Last Key. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But so he's helping to expand the Conjuring brand into a successful franchise universe of hits like Annabelle series. Another great series. Annabelle was spawned from The Conjuring. Now, Justice League is now finishing its run in theaters. The film will be followed in the DC Extended Universe by Aquaman, coming out later this year, December the 21st, and Wonder Woman number 2 on November the 1st, 2019. Now, Shazam is expected to hit theaters around April the 5th, 2018, Cyborg in 2020, and of course, we've been all waiting for it, the Green Lantern Corps in 2020. So, this is pretty promising because I think now it's kind of like when Kevin Feige came into Marvel, he had this vision and he had this clear direction that he wanted to take these films, and already with, you know, Incredible Hulk and Iron Man, he's like, all right, so what can we do to make this greater? And he had this whole plan of a 10-year phase, which in Marvel movies would lead up to the culmination of what's going to happen this May in theaters. The Infinity War. So truly amazing. I hope that Hamada can do for DC what Feige has done for Marvel. And Austin, I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, that is the hope. I mean, I think the main thing that DC has needed for a long time is a guy to take everything, I mean, every little announcement that they've had and kind of bring it all together. Mm-hmm. They need a plan. I think that's one of the big problems with that whole universe is they've not had an end goal. They've just kind of been scrapping as they go along. I think if this guy, if the credits are as true as they sound, because he's got some great credits to his name.
Oh, yeah.
If he can do what he's done for the other fringe, I think DC's on a good track. Now, there's not a lot of things going on this year. We have, of course, the Ben Affleck announcement. Is he coming back? Is he not? and then Aquaman and some things like that in that nature. But they've already went ahead and canceled the Lobo movie and the Deadshot movie. Those are no longer in the works. Those were rumors, right?
Yeah,
they've came out and said, hey, we're not doing those anymore. So steps are being made. And I think part of this is they are taking initiative. I think this is their year to get everything figured out. I think they will. And I think this guy is a pretty good choice to do that. But let's go ahead and move on to – oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, speaking of James Wan, I did go and catch Insidious Part 4 this week. And I wanted to kind of – since we're on this topic, Alex and I, we actually went through 1 and 3 in 2 days here at the house. We was like, all right, so to get the full story, we want to make sure we go through 1, 2, and 3. And then we went and saw 4 in the theater. Now, Austin, I actually saw your review before going to the theater, and I'm like, okay, so there's some promise and prospect here. But I was actually a little – I wish there was more. You know, I wish there was just a little bit more. It's a little lackluster. I don't know if this is going to be the final film in the franchise. I don't know if there's been a word on that yet. But for me, I think if I was rating the film, I would probably go like a 5.6 out of 10. So
okay.
Yeah.
Listen, I gave it right on the edge of a fresh. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
And the only reason I did is because we got a little bit more backstory of our main character.
Elise.
Our 73-year-old woman who's carrying the war franchise.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
A 73-year-old woman is carrying an entire franchise on her shoulders.
Carrying the franchise. And other than that, though, other than her some really good backstory and some really cool stuff between the characters, a couple of good jump scares.
Yeah.
The movie is kind of lame if you think too much into it. The only reason I gave it such a score is because expected a dumpster fire. I expected a dumpster fire. It was better than I thought, but even then, it's the worst film in the franchise.
Oh my gosh.
So I kind of agree with you there, to be honest. But yeah, let's go ahead and move on. We're talking Daredevil, the flagship Marvel series on Netflix, is set to return later this year. But while we've seen photos from the new seasons of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, the Devil of Hell's Kitchen has been nowhere in sight. That's a pun. That's good.
Oh my gosh. That's
some of the first set photos from the production of Daredevil Season 3 has surfaced online, teasing more action from Matt Murdock, Wilson Fisk, and Karen Page. The photo show the personalized chairs for Vincent D'Onofrio's character and another unidentifiable cast member. Now, there's been no word on who the villain is going to be this season, other than, of course, Wilson Fisk. Joe, are you excited for this season?
I am excited, and I actually followed this story, and especially with Vincent D'Onofrio's I'll follow his Instagram account,
and
there was something he had posted, and then comicbook.com reposted it. It's like, what is the fate of Wilson Fisk? And I think in season 3, we're going to finally see what that fate's going to have because, you know, in season 2, he's been in prison. He's been locked away. But, you know, there's still another run left in him. And so, I don't know. I'm really interested to see who they're going to bring in as the villain, the big bad in season 3. I hope personally it's not going to be Kingpin because we kind of already went through that in season 1. I hope they don't relive that because, I mean, there's not really much more to elaborate on in the story that's not already been done concerning his background and what his motives are. But I'm really super excited. I mean, sure. I mean, Daredevil was the flagship program that started everything on Netflix and still my favorite of all the series on the Netflix Marvel series.
Awesome.
So.
All right. Well, Fox has renewed The Gifted for season 2, making the official announcement of the X-Men series.
Mm-hmm.
The Gifted continuation was something of a question as the show hit season low ratings going into December with just 2.8 million viewers and a 0.8 rating in the 18 to 49 demographic. Given the steady decline in ratings since the series premiere, The Gifted was definitely considered a bubble show. With the season 2 announcement, it's clear that Fox is reinvesting the show for at least one more season and allowing time for the digital streaming services and home video to help build awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see the first season?
I've actually made it through 4 episodes already of the
That's
first
how
season.
How many episodes?
Really?
That's so weird.
Really?
I watched 4 episodes. That's strange.
That is so Stephen Strange. Wow.
So weird.
Do you like it so far, Joe?
I do, actually. I really like it. I think there is a group. I don't want to spoil too much, but there is a subgroup that this story focuses on, and it's actually a really sinister group of people from the X-Men universe. And and I think that having the kids find out their fate and who what their lineage is involving the mutant, you know, whole backstory, I think it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty well done. It's definitely light years ahead. We all know that Inhumans got canceled a couple of months ago. And so, you know, it's definitely light years ahead of what Inhumans tried to be.
Inhumans was the one that they did part of it in the IMAX, correct?
Correct, yeah, yeah. Okay. So, but Inhumans was canceled, by the way. If anybody didn't know that, hashtag spoiler alert. So,
spoiler.
But, yeah.
Spoiler.
Spoiler.
Well, I have not. So, if you get, I'll let you guys finish up that series. You let me know whether it's something that we should, add to the list.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of go on with the X-Men thing, since we're on that topic before we go to the next one. I do want to say that there was a conversation between Kevin Feige and the producer over at Fox, 20th Century Fox, about incorporating X-Men into the Avengers universe. And the execs over at Fox said, sure, why not? You know, Bob Iger is one of the and I can't remember the executive's name, but he said Bob Iger is one of the most intelligent men right now in the business, and it would just make sense to have X-Men be part of that Avengers universe. And so already, since this deal's been made, there is forward motion in incorporating our beloved characters into this whole MCU world. And good things are going to be happening, guys. I can't wait for it. So, but speaking of which, so this is really interesting. Disney's purchasing 20th Century Fox is obviously big news to everybody, especially Marvel fans. And knowing that all of their favorite characters can now be under one roof, hello, that's awesome. So, but what does that mean for a program like Gotham? Do you ever think about that? So Gotham is now on Fox.
I've been wondering about that.
And it's really interesting. So let's see what it says here. Like, you know, it's a product of DC Comics and Warner Brothers, but it airs on Fox. Now, according to executives at Fox, it means absolutely nothing. During the network's presentation at the 2018 TCA press tour on Thursday, representatives talk all about the pending sale to Disney and how it could affect their plans moving forward. Now, when it came to Gotham, they assured everyone in attendance that Batman prequel series was not in danger. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of Gotham. I love me some Gotham.
I'm glad to hear that news.
Yeah, and I'm really happy to hear that, because I think Gotham is one of DC's right now, definitely right up there with Arrow and Flash. It's one of their main staples right now, keeping DC on the small screen, so. That's all I got to say about that, Judy.
That's good, though, because it's not just Gotham either. There are a couple of programs that I'm like, what are they going to do? Even the X-Men kind of worried me because of the whole Deadpool and Logan being rated R thing.
Yeah.
I was a little worried about all of those problems, but it seems to me like Disney knows what the fans love. Yeah. And that's what I love about
Disney. They have their finger.
So I think they're going to.
They've got their finger on the pulse of everything. And I think.
They know the big questions that fans are going to flip out about, and I'm glad they're addressing them up front so they don't leave us dragging behind. My God, what's going on?
So the X-Files, is that on Fox?
I believe so,
It originally was. It should still be.
So does that mean that the X-Files, I guess it does. I guess that means X-Files is now under Disney brand. Wow.
Well, don't they?
There is so much weirdness about this. I mean, every time I start talking about it, I'm all, but wait, that was on Fox.
It's like one of those onions you just peel back.
Yeah, it's so bizarre and so different. So I love it. So I want to give a quick shout out right quick before we go on. We want to say hello to Lou, Darth Baca, and we have another channel hanging out with us. That's the username. Hey, another channel. We love you guys. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. You guys are just awesome.
I know who it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, speaking of Fox, isn't Seth MacFarlane's The Orville, isn't that on Fox, if I'm not wrong? I believe that's on Fox.
Wow, I technically think it is, yeah.
I think all his shows are on the same network.
So I think Disney now owns this show. So we're talking about the Orville. It seems to have been getting a lot of love from the fans. I, for one, I've enjoyed the episodes that I have watched. It sounds like one episode next season may go in a very odd and interesting direction. There's a chance that we will see the sci-fi series cross over with McFarlane's other hit show. Anybody? Family Guy? According to executive producer Rich Apple. A script has been written, and it's just waiting for approval. He says, I sent the script on a showboat to approve, but we end up live on the bridge of the Orville. We'll see. So who's up for a Family Guy Orville?
You got one job here, Lois. That's pretty awesome there. Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like the coolest, yes. The coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yes, yes. Oh, Lois.
Lois.
Oh, God. Can we do an entire episode with you guys doing Family Guy voices?
Lindsay Badger, you want some popsicles?
Not from down in that basement. No, thank you.
You can come down here in my basement. Mm. I got some for you.
Okay, anyway, moving on. Lindsay Badger.
I know we've been talking about a lot of X-Men, not X-Files, X-Men this in the news this week, but another somewhat successful, I feel it's successful, is Legion FX on FX.
Yes, great show.
Yep. Well, the second season is coming up pretty soon, and they're going to take the timeline and jump it into the future when it debuts.
The future?
It'll begin 1 year after the events of the first season's finale. So he had his mental breakdown, battled the bad guy, and then we're going to do a little time jump.
All right.
And David Haller, which is Dan Stevens, was trying to piece together what had happened in the time that we've lost. So that's going to be basically what he does this season, is kind of rehash the steps that we're trying to figure out what's going on. So he says that the time jump gives him new struggles to work through with as David, the character. And there's issues of trust in terms of who exactly rescued him. What have they rescued him from? Is he a force of good or is he evil? Either way, is he being used?
Yeah.
What does this turn into? Which team does he end up playing for? Is always something that's in question, and it's really going to be taken to another level this year.
Nice.
So FX also revealed that there's a new actor playing the Shadow King in Legion's second season, and that the series also dropped Bryan Singer as the executive producer. So Legion is going to come up on FX in April. I'm really, really excited about this show. I was not really on my radar until Joe brought it up for me, and I fell in love with it.
It's a psychological thriller. I mean, you really don't understand what is going on until the last two episodes.
If you guys don't know anything about it, it is a mind warp.
Yeah. And,
it is a mind warp, and I thoroughly recommend you guys watch this.
Yeah, and Sydney over in another channel, he says that this is the most evil timeline ever. Joe has a mustache. Wow.
Okay.
Sydney, I got all the feels. All right.
I love
all right, guys. So, you know, we can't finish up this news segment without a little bit of Star Wars love. Star Wars The Last Jedi. We're going to be talking about some box office numbers here from, you know, Christmas. So what's happened? Last Jedi has achieved a worldwide box office total of, are you ready for it? Drum roll, please. $1.205 billion. That's billion, not a million, billion. Now, that's the 13th highest gross in box office history. Now, this comes despite the Star Wars Last Jedi having a relatively soft opening in China. The Last Jedi earned $28.7 million in its first weekend in the second largest box office market in the world. Now, Star Wars The Last Jedi continues to dominate other foreign markets. Its biggest success has been in the United Kingdom, the UK, at $102 million. And we also have Germany with $73.5 million, France with $57.6 million, and then Japan, $52.2 million. Now, The Last Jedi has earned $572 million domestically, with $632 million worldwide international box office. Now, the film earned $230 million in its first 3 days alone in the foreign markets and opened with a combined 450 mil worldwide. Now, that is the fifth, I said the fifth largest opening in box office history. That's pretty big. That's a pretty big opening. Yeah.
That's a whole lot of clams.
But I got to tell you.
That's a lot.
You got a lot of clams there, Lois. You need to do something about that there. But that's pretty big. And you know what? It's kind of anticipated because on the wings of The Force Awakens, which introduced us to so many new characters and new worlds, new planets and all that, it was kind of, you know, fans are eager to see the reprise roast of Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, and, of course, Carrie Fisher's Leia Organa. So I think, you know, just having those heavy hitters on the screen coming back in their traditional roles was huge for people because you're merging the new and the old and you're combining two worlds and introducing it to a whole new generation of fans. And I think that's just – everybody just knew that it was going to be like that. And I'm not surprised it's the fifth largest opening in box office history. So, yeah. So that's
– And I think that they're still trying to give it crap because they've had some – from one week to another week, there's been some bigger drops than people anticipated.
Yeah.
And then you look at The Force Awakens compared to The Last Jedi. Yeah, The Force Awakens is going to make a lot more money because of what you just said. That was the movie that reintroduced and introduced. But still, I mean, you have to look at The Last Jedi and say that's an incredible sum of money.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to call this a bomb. But comparing The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi are two completely different things because we had been without Star Wars for almost 10 years, all right?
Yeah.
Now we're getting Star Wars every single year, and this movie passed Rogue One, I believe, in the first, like, week or two.
Oh, yeah.
So The Last Jedi is doing great. I don't care what people say. I think it's a really good movie.
I love it. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
And I enjoyed it even more the second time.
Yeah,
I did.
I enjoyed it more the second time.
And it's the repeat viewings that's bringing in the money. So.
And you know what? Fans are really getting excited for May because that's when we get the Han Solo film. Now, I know that there's been so much going on with that film in terms of the actors and the directors and then Ron Howard coming in. And there's so much, like, I hope and I pray that when I go to the box office, it's not going to be a stinking turd. I'm just telling you, it bothers me, though. It bothers me, though, that the directors and the company was so worried about the script that it's just not – I don't know if there's – I mean, Rogue One, they got some meat. They got some stuff to work with. But Han Solo, man, I mean, you know, I'm just –
I'm worried.
I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic, Leo. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
But – all right, guys, so we're going to transition now into the second half of the show, where we're going to actually talk about the topic. Now, this topic came up. We were actually put it out. Team PopX, every so often we put out a little thing within ourselves in the Team PopX community. Hey, what would you want a show about? And our very own Mr. Mike Ippolito gave us this really cool idea. What about if we did a show on Marvel versus DC? Now, right off the bat, I was like, I don't know if I can do that because, you know, you're pitting two giants up against each other. But when you start thinking about it, and like Lindsay said, pulling back a little bit of the onion, you kind of can approach it from a perspective that everybody feels wonderful about, and that's what we're going to do here tonight. But before we do that, we're going to actually give you a little bit of backstory on both DC and Marvel. And so you know a little history, you know some times, you know some things, and you know who inspired what and how did it happen. And then after that, we're going to kind of break off into a roundtable discussion and talk about what we grew up with. And the title of this week's episode is Marvel versus DC, The Path to Childhood. And so what we're going to be doing is we're going to go back in our childhood and talk about that. Who was our first superheroes? How do we all get exposed to the world of comics and all this? So before we do that, I want to go ahead and dive into a little bit of verbiage, if you will. And we hope you guys enjoy this topic. And we want to know, too, as we're typing and as we're going along and as we're doing this, leave us some comments and let us know your thoughts on this too, because you are a vital part of this show. Okay.
Absolutely.
So I know a lot of you are wondering now why you want to do a show that puts two major behemoths comic book icons up against each other, like Marvel and DC. Well, we're not actually doing that. So AKA spoiler alert, we're not going to be, you know, you can't just butt heads with two giants like that. Rather, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Now, Team PopX is pretty diverse, I would have to say. You know, Lindsay's got her female perspective on this, Austin is a kid of the 90s. I'm a kid of the 80s. And so is Mike and myself. And we all have different origin stories. You see what I did there? We all have different origin stories within ourselves on how we first come to know and love comic books. Now, today we're going to be talking a little about which characters and franchises that we grew up with as a child and how that first contact with the Man of Steel or Peter Parker led us to where we are today. Now, but before we get started, we're going to do some backstory, and I'm going to give you a little history. We're going to start with DC Comics first, because actually DC was the first on the scene in the comic book industry. Mm-hmm. So we're going to honor that and go that path. So in 1934, a publishing entrepreneur named Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson founded a company under the name National Allied Publications. Now, DC Comics was formed during the merging of National Allied Publications and Detective Comics Incorporated, as well as also an affiliate, All American Publications. And so this, what happened in 1934, all these companies came together, and a lot of these companies were producing pulp magazines and funny comics. So it was stuff in the newspaper weekly, you know, daily and weekly comics. And so DC is known as the king of all comics. All right, so I want to get that out first and foremost. They are the king. They will always be the king because they were the first. It has been the leader in the industry since it started many, many years ago, and they paved their way with their styles and strategies, and many other comic book industries in America followed their path and followed them as you know, for example, Marvel Comics came and was formed because of DC Comics. And so the history of DC Comics has gone on to be a huge part of today's American pop culture. So, All right.
And DC Comics were able to survive and continue to thrive, even when there were times when they had gone through declining periods, when comic books were losing interest. However, today they proved to be one of the most successful stories in the comic book industry and are the subsidiary of the Warner Brothers Entertainment and are also part of Time Warner as well. Now, DC Comics made a name for themselves in 1939 as they were then founded by Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. During that time, its company was known as National Allied Publications. The initials for the DC comic books were taken from the Detective comic series. Now, you guys probably all know what that is. Yeah. With that series came the rise of Batman. Mm-hmm. There was another line of comic books known as Action Comics, which featured a new superhero named Superman. Over the years, these two superheroes became quite popular, and to this day, they are still two of the most popular characters to ever appear in comic books, and if you look at 2017, to ever appear in movies, and they went on to spark the way for many other superheroes.
Oh, yes.
Like, a lot of superheroes.
All right. Well, there once was a time when this industry was under an attack during the 1950s, as they were not considered to be up to any American standards for any children and the younger generation, too. This company did continue to keep its success during that time, along with several other companies, and covered some areas as Westerns and romantic stories, but it was their reemergence as superheroes, which would lead them to a huge recreation of what made them so successful in the comic book industry, known as the Silver Age. And I remember talking about this.
Yes, you do.
In our wonderful history.
Yes.
It was during the 1965 when the industry reintroduced a new superhero by the name of Flash. Look at that. Austin's wearing the Flash tonight, you guys.
Yeah, look at you, Barry Allen.
Look at you. This character was created many years before, but was brought back and updated to be placed in more popular times. This time, more emotional and personal, compelling stories were used, along with some better storyboards and artwork, which helped liven up the character. The company did the same with all the other characters, too, which included Batman and Superman. Then shortly afterwards, the Justice League Society and the Justice League of America was created.
Yes. Oh.
Yes.
And so
all of the awesomeness has re-risen and reborn. Yes.
And so to kind of give a little backstory really quick before we move on, Lindsay was talking to us about a dark day and a dark time when the industry was coming under attack. We're talking about McCarthyism, and we're talking about the whole era in communists. And so what happened was
and
comics were feeding into kids' minds, and it was polluting their intellect and their activities. It's kind of like how people today view video games. Oh, the video games are they're evil.
They're
a Satan. They're going to get you. But anyway, so you know it's kind of like that. And so what happened was, and there was no filter. So an artist or an author in 1950 could write a very graphic scene, and there was no rating system.
And draw it however they wanted to draw it.
Exactly. And it didn't really matter, because there could be some crazy stuff going on, and these kids were reading this, and it was kind of bizarre. So the Comics Code Authority, which was devised out of the whole McCarthyism era, you see the old logo. If you have comics up until like 94, 96, I think, they still have this stamp of approval on it. But I think Marvel, being the rebel that it was, started making comics, and they didn't even start putting the stamp on it, because readers became more self-aware and more conscious.
We don't need no rules.
Yeah, roads where we're going, we don't need roads. But so a little bit of history there for DC Comics, and so hopefully you guys enjoyed that little backstory. Now we're going to transition over to the Marvel side and give you a little backstory. So brief history on Marvel. Some of the most well-known comic book characters have came from Marvel Comics, and we're talking in pop culture in general. Now, it is also known to be a huge corporation that is labeled to be Marvel Entertainment. That's where we get the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This corporation is known worldwide and has such a great influence, and its amazing revenues, obviously it's blockbusters that is sending out every summer. The history of Marvel Comics is quite an interesting story, though, as it goes back very far to the time when its popularity became a household name, mostly among younger people. All right? So the beginning of this comic book originally, this whole comic book franchise originally was founded during the year of 1939, and it really wasn't called Marvel at the time. It was actually called Timely Comics, okay? So through Timely Comics, look at that logo. That's so old school. So through Timely Comics came some great and wonderful characters, and these characters were known to be superheroes. Now, the many characters went on to become quite successful and among many young people, and gained a lot of popularity, especially here in the United States. One of those characters that seemed to be created during the time of World War II was Captain America. Now, this character became a huge hit with Timely Comics, and this character, along with a few others, were known to always be heroes that time and that were timely and were continuously battling an enemy, an ongoing enemy, and which during that era, of course, World War II, who were we fighting? We were fighting
them Nazis.
Those darn Nazis. And
darn Nazis.
So, you know, look at this. If you look at this cover, this is a very symbolic cover. It's when Captain America is actually swinging a fist to the face of Adolf Hitler. And, you know, so Timely Comics was putting out these comic books that were kind of rallying around our troops that were overseas. And so even though they were overseas and we couldn't really connect with them, this was at a time before, you know, we didn't have – a lot of people didn't have television. They just had radios. And the only way they got their information was either through reading something or the radio. And so reading a comic book with a superhero that's donning the red, white, and blue, hitting a Nazi in the face, that really kind of sent shockwaves throughout all the young people.
And they also had the newsreels if you went to a movie theater. Oh, yeah. If you were fortunate enough to be able to afford to go to a movie theater during that time, then they would – run a newsreel and show you stuff, footage from the war and stuff.
Absolutely. So. Awesome. Tell us a little bit more about Marvel Comics.
Sorry.
You might want to refresh just a little bit. You're a little bit glitchy there.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He's had some split pea soup today. So, yeah. It's all good. So,
Nazis.
Yeah, go for it. Them Nazis are in your internet connections.
Sorry, guys. So many styles and interests began to change at the end of the war.
The characters, too, would go on to change as once costumed superheroes that gained so much attention and popularity were now declining, and it was other characters that were taking their place in history. Also during that time period, Timely Comics became known as Atlas Comics. So Atlas changed the theme from once wartime heroes to a variety of other themes, such as horror. Mm-hmm. After some time had passed, the wartime heroes returned to battle. The communists, rather than the Nazis, however, Atlas Comics went under the political scrutiny and was then needed to change once again. The Code Authority was then formed and went on to be used to serve as the means for regulating the comic books under or along with their specific content. After that period of time, the comic book heroes then began to reemerge right back into the comic book scene. The Silver Age, as we have learned before, has now began to feature some new and exciting artwork and great storylines to the books. All of the older superheroes were now transformed into newer versions of themselves, and now there were more emotional and personal backgrounds and some great stories as well. It was then, the year of 1961, that Marvel Comics emerged. And with it came, of course, the first of many Fantastic Four. This group of superheroes would go on to become quite popular and stay that way for many years to come. They still haven't gotten it good.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to see more familiarity with the two, where they're bringing back the old and refreshing them and renewing them, and they're starting to become back into the limelight again. So that's kind of neat to see where two started, and they kind of start, you know, almost going down the same path. So to continue, in many ways, DC Comics inspired the minds of Martin Goodman of then Timely Comics, Stan Lee, a young scrawny office assistant, and a creator with an extraordinary vision and ability to draw new styles, new dimensions, and Jack the King Kirby, for example, the Dawn of Justice Society and Justice League inspired Stan Lee and Kirby to create the Avengers. Many characters from DC inspired several characters at Marvel and vice versa. So you can see where they're feeding off of each other. I mean, obviously as competitors, but also as creative inspiration. Marvel comics focus more on the story of the real life of the character, whereas DC focused primarily on the powers of their superheroes and battles. Rather than the story of the hero behind the scenes, there has been some give and take over the years. For example, DC Comics' Deathstroke, Slade Wilson, inspired a young Rob Liefeld, thank you, to poke a little fun at DC and create Wade Wilson, better known as Deadpool. Mm-hmm. So they're give still bouncing back.
Yep, exactly.
I love it. In 1996, there was even an epic battle in the comics, and the heroes from Marvel faced off against the DC universe. Icons like Wolverine versus Lobo, Superman versus Hulk, The Flash versus Quicksilver, and Batman versus Captain America. Namor versus Aquaman, and even Robin versus X-Men's Jubilee. Readers were able to vote for their favorite on who would win the battle, and Marvel and DC Comics agreed to make the legendary battle a four-part miniseries comic. Of course, most of the battles were a draw, because I mean, it's kind of like taking two magnets and sticking them together. Where each universe shook hands, and in the end. And end in reverence and respect for each company, which I think is really cool.
Pretty noble, yeah.
Yeah, a pretty cool move and a very noble of each company to acknowledge each other's impact on modern day pop culture.
Yeah. So, you know, we have right off the bat, you know, we know that DC Comics was one of the original that formed out of, and if you go back and you check out our amazing History of Comics, The Rise of Comics and Pop Culture, there's a 5-part series that we did here back in 2016 and 2017. We actually wrapped it up in 2017, but that is really a great foundation. If you really want to know about the history of comics, go back and check it out. It's actually a playlist on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/popxcast. And it's really great, very informative. But you talk about the Jewish immigrants as they came over, fleeing from what was happening in World War II over in France and Germany. And they came and settled here in America and started, you know, the print press was what they knew. And so they started in comics, and DC was came right out of that, and so did Marvel. Marvel was inspired to be created because of DC Comics was such a mega giant with, you know, Superman and Batman. But over the years, you know, there's been a lot of poking and prodding in terms of the comics. Like for some Marvel comics have actually wrote certain characters and certain individuals who were pencilers and inkers. They've actually drawn them and kind of poking little things at them like, hey, I know who you are, you know, in the comics. And it's really funny. If you go back and look at the you can actually Google it, the diversity between Marvel and DC, you'll see a lot of cross connectivity going on. So it's really interesting. And so given the history of Marvel versus DC, we're going to kind of transition now. So let's talk about a little bit about history. We got that out of the way. Let's talk about our own perspective. Now, who did we see or read about first, and how was that first exposure to superheroes? What did that lead us up to where we are today? How did that impact us? Now, I'm going to pause for a second. This isn't just a question for Team PopX, but a question for you as a viewer as well. We want to know what your thoughts are and what franchise that you admire most. Now, over in our live chat room, we want to hear what you have to say, and we're going to read it at the end of the show. Who did you first gravitate towards? If you were a 5-year-old kid watching the television or reading a book for the first time, what was that first superhero that just did it for you? Who was it? Yeah. Was it a Marvel character? Was it a DC character? Was it somebody totally different? We want to know. So we're going to actually start ladies first. We're going to go around, and we're going to go in counterclockwise mode. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So Lindsay, share with us your first experience.
I've been thinking kind of all evening, and I know whenever we first introduced this topic, I'm trying to think back to my earliest memory of any superhero whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the earliest that I can think of is the old school, like 1930s, 1940s Superman cartoons.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Yes. Okay. Everybody knows this song. I'm not going to sing it all, but that's probably my earliest memory of any kind of exposure to a superhero. Nice. So we're kicking it off with some Man of Steel Superman with the DC world. So then comes along, as you had mentioned, Christopher Reeve and movies, the Superman movies. That is probably my very first movie that I watched as the kid. And so again, you know, we've got a lot of love for Superman, but I think what made me fall in love with superheroes is the 1980s Batman movies.
Oh man. Yeah.
I fell head over heels in love with all things Batman.
Michael Keaton.
Because the variety of villains and all the bright colors that, you know, I mean, Two-Face and Penguin and Joker and all that stuff. And then, I mean, I also remember vaguely, because it was not like a regular thing, but seeing the old TV show of Batman and Adam West doing the crazy stuff in his purpley outfit that he did. That is such a goofy series. Yeah. But those are my earliest memories other than just literal, like, in the newspaper comic strips of being exposed to superheroes. So I have a very, very soft spot in my heart for my DC world. Mm-hmm. And I've always had a tendency to lean DC and not really had a lot of knowledge other than just your bare bones basics of Marvel other than that. So that would be kind of where my starting point would begin.
All right. Well, Mike is actually going to be joining us here in just a second on camera. So I want to kind of get him queued up and ready. Mike, are you there? Hey, I think he's muted. Are you muted? He's not muted.
Yeah.
There we go.
Look at this. The guy behind the screen. There is a human being behind that screen. I promise. So, Mike, I got to ask you that question. Who, what franchise? Who was it?
Well, it's going to be the first. It's going to be DC. And we're basically roughly the same age. So I'm going right after the Christopher Reeve original Superman. That's the one that kind of got it started for me. Then it kind of went into the 66 Batman. Mm. Also the Hulk. Bill Bixby's Incredible Hulk.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like a little backwards. I kind of got into the shows and the movies before the comics.
Right.
And I'm just, even as goofy as it may be now, but for the 60s, that was what people enjoyed was, you know, to see the comic book hero on TV for the first time.
Awesome.
And just now, recently, in the last 2 years, they've actually made comics based on the 66 Batman, which I went and I purchased every single one of them because I just loved the show and to see comics, you know, to be, have them release comics about it and have different adventures. And just a quick side note, there was actually one character that was scripted, was written for the show that never appeared, which was Two-Face.
Really?
They actually wrote it and they created a comic. And there's Batman 66.
Oh, look at that.
With Two-Face, never aired on the show.
Huh. Wow. That's crazy. But they were able to do it in the comic book adaptation.
Yeah. They took what they had written for the show and they basically
made
a comic. That was just a one-shot.
Yeah. Now, Mike, you're talking about 66 Batman. Have you had a chance to see the movie that came out last year with Adam West and Burt Ward? The animated animated one. Did you get a chance to see that?
I saw that right after it came out. I thought it was amazing. They did a great job of it. You know, and for me, that's, I mean, Michael Keaton, Christian Bale, you know, Ben Affleck, all the ones that they've had now. But I still go back to Adam West is the original Batman.
That's how,
you know, but, and on the Marvel side of things, I didn't really get a whole lot into it. I mean, except for the Hulk, you know, but when I was, you know, younger, I mean, I did have some comics, not a vast majority, but I got more into when the movies started to come out. I mean, I've heard of, you know, Iron Man, Hulk, and, you know, then I really kind of got into it more, you know, because of the movies, you know, and I've actually kind of taken interest in a lot of the kind of behind the scenes kind of thing of documentaries and stuff. And, you know, just to kind of go back to Batman real quick, there was a documentary I just able to get watched called Batman and Bill.
Yes, and Bill Finger.
Finger, about how he finally got the recognition he deserved after all these years. And I was, you know, I kind of was seeing and to watch that, to see how, you know, these guys were robbed of everything.
But Bob Kane kind of just took his design and created the whole franchise and really didn't give Bill Finger the credit. I mean, there was some tension there between Bill Finger and Bob Kane, and it was kind of sad. And that, you know, that documentary is so well done. It's on Netflix right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
and
I watched it on Hulu. I saw it on Hulu.
It's so good, dude.
But it's the same with Siegel and Schuster. They signed. They don't know what they were signing over, and then to fight just to get their credits, and then to finally be recognized. And
that's amazing. So
that's kind of where it kind of started for me. And, you know, I love the Marvel franchise, what's going on now. And actually, it was quick breaking news in Marvel real quick.
Okay.
While we're on right now, Michael Peña is in discussion. They're getting the script ready for Ant-Man 3.
So already?
He just announced that. So it's while we were on live, it just came through.
Good.
So well, look at that. You that's heard awesome. It here first, folks, on PopX. Wow. I mean, you're getting the live feed. Yeah, take that, NASDAQ, you know. My gosh, man. That's awesome. So, awesome. So Mike, thank you so much. I mean, me and you kind of have that kindred spirit because we are children of the 80s. And so I truly get what you're saying, and I love it. And I love the fact you just brought up Adam West. I mean, Adam West right here. Yeah. Love to Adam West and Burt Ward as well. But we're going to switch things up, and we're actually going to go back into a younger perspective, Mr. Austin Burke. And I want to know what your perspective is on this topic. So,
Young. Well, yes. I'm getting pretty old myself. I'm getting up there, guys.
Yeah, you're still the younger one of the group. So,
Well, my perspective is going to be a little bit different. I'm
in the same vein of what Mike was, I actually got into the television side of things before I got into the comics. So the first television shows that I ever remembered watching was the Batman animated series. Oh, and man. Batman was my definitive favorite all-time superhero. I loved him so much that I asked my mother for as many Justice League comics as I could possibly garner. I even got the whole set of toys, the entire Justice League. It was the coolest thing ever. And then
impressive.
Left him at somebody's house once in Austin. But
it was
But I loved DC, all things DC growing up. I really didn't even get into the movies until a little bit later on when I watched the Batman series. Even growing up, I was a big fan of Batman and Robin. Mm. And I look back on that now, I realize how I hate that movie now. But growing up, I loved that movie because mm-hmm. I loved all things Batman. Now, the tide started to turn when the Sam Raimi-directed Spider-Man movie came out. That movie, when I first saw it, was a revelation because I was, I believe, 7 years old when that movie first came out. Wow. A seven-year-old peering upon the phenomenal use of CGI, Green Goblin in all of weird suited glory, an incredible Green movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean,
it's right there, a little crow's foot.
A little wrinkle right there.
I'm sorry, Austin.
Hold on. We're refreshing.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
He's having some internet technical difficulties tonight.
I will agree with Austin that I thoroughly enjoyed watching the cartoons too. Because, I mean, yeah. I was a daycare kid growing up. My parents would drop me off before they go to work. We'd watch all the cartoons in the morning before we go, while we eat our cereal before school. So you would get Batman. You would get X-Men.
Mm.
So those two series right there were huge impacts on right. my childhood.
Awesome.
I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, you're fine, man. Know. You're
they're,
fine,
the
man.
The Wi-Fi. They're coming Tuesday, so hopefully next show will be okay. But, yeah, as I was saying, so the tide started to shift from Batman to Spider-Man. I became a huge Spider-Man fan, and I started getting into the Marvel comics. And that is when I was looking up to how Joe had this affinity for comic books. And I'm like, man, I want reading and looking at. I want to do what he's doing. So I started reading a lot of comic books, reading the novels, reading every graphic thing that I could get my hands on. And that's when I really started to start soaking in the information. And that's when I really started to get into comic books, was around the time when Marvel first started killing it in the movie industry. And from there on out, every movie after that that Marvel came out with turned me more from the DC universe to the Marvel universe. Now I look at it and I say, I'm a huge fan of the Marvel movies, but I still love DC and their movies, but I'm a bigger fan of what DC does in the comic books and on the small screen.
Yeah.
Each individual studio, they have their own thing. Like, my favorite movie of all time is The Dark Knight, right? So DC holds my favorite movie, but I think Marvel has better movies as a whole. I just think it's amazing, and a lot of people online take note. Isn't it amazing how you can love both Marvel and DC?
Yes.
It is amazing. It is a beautiful,
isn't it amazing?
It's a beautiful thing because
I see it more as, like, from a parent's perspective. I have two children. When I was pregnant with my second child, I was like, how in the world am I going to be able to love this one just as much as this one? God makes room in your heart for all things to be loved. That's the way I see it.
You do. Well, I mean, yeah.
That's an awesome perspective, and I mean, love the fact you've thrown in a little Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire love there. That was just you're sprinkling on there. All right, so I guess the ball is now in my hands. So for me, you know, I was born in 1979. I'm coming up on 40, and of course, we all know in 1978 there was an amazing film with an amazing score by Mr. John Williams, and that is Superman with Christopher Reeve. And that I remember as a child, we're probably talking 82, 83. And this is back when the movie channel, you know, the movie channel would give you 30 days free on your 13 channel rotary. You'd have to actually turn the dial of the TV. So 30 days, once a month out of a whole year, we would get free movie channel. And on the movie channel, there my dad recorded Superman, because this was at the era where, you know, the video store was just now starting to come into play, because VHS tapes were starting to come out, Betamax before that. But now the home era of home video and the rental store, Dad recorded Superman on an old VHS tape. Actually, it took two tapes because the movie is so long. But he recorded it, and I remember coming home one day from school and watching it. He's like, son, you need to watch this. This is awesome. And my father introduced me to Clark Kent. And it was amazing. I was like, I've never seen anything like this. Who is this guy flying around, and he's saving people, and he's looking inside their organs and, you know, seeing if they got cancer, or he's trying to help them or whatever. And then, you know, just a couple years after that, of course, we hit the rerun era of the Incredible Hulk franchise. And every Saturday, ABC Studios would put out this awesome, you know, the Incredible Hulk. And it was just phenomenal. I mean, here's this guy, big Lou Ferrigno. And the only, might I say, you've heard me say this many times on PopX, the only human to physically ever play the role of Hulk. And it's just mind-blowing. And then, we get up into the era when I was in probably eighth grade going into freshman in high school, and Nickelodeon exploded on the scene. And Nickelodeon started this thing at night called Nick at Night. And on Nick at Night, they would start doing reruns of the old Adam West Batman. And so as a kid, you know, my brain is just, I'm just like, you know, I'm like, holy cow, this is
That's
amazing.
That's why I watched it.
Yeah, Nick at Night, man. And it's just like, you know, it's like 10:30 at night. Here Batman would come on. I'm like, oh, this is so awesome. And so, and of course, we know what happened in 1989. Those reruns and that fuel from the 80s inspired Tim Burton to create Batman. And so it was truly awesome. It was an awesome time to grow up and actually watch all of this come to fruition and experience this explosion of superheroes in the 80s and 90s. And then, of course, that led to the cartoon genres. But for me, it will be Christopher Reeve and Luke Ferrigno. Those two are the ones, the icons. It's just one day we got to do a show. Who would win in a battle, Incredible Hulk and Superman? And just go through it and have a total hour of just
Break
nerdisms. But,
point by point.
And, you know, for me, that was truly what spawned everything in my life. And I, to this day, Christopher Reeve will always be my Superman. Yep. And a fantastic actor. He's gone way too soon. And so... Anyway, get a little sentimental when I start talking about Reeve, but
the good old days,
yes. But you know, and it was actually because of that, and my dad started. He saw that I had an interest in this stuff because I watched Superman almost every day. I would come home from school and I just put the VHS tape. He's like, okay, yeah, I think he's into comics. My dad started bringing me comics, and he started going every time he came home from the grocery store. He'd a brown paper bag. Long before plastic, he pulled it out. Hey, son, look at this Incredible Hulk comic. And, of course, my eyes, you know, I was just like, whoa, this is so cool. I'm holding my first comic book and just the smell of the pages. And, oh, man, it was just a great time to be a kid. That's all I got to say. Yeah. But and we're going to acknowledge right now over in the chat room, Darth Bacchus says for him, it was definitely DC Comics and Superman. And then we got Luke. He said, I think the old Spider-Man cartoon and Adam West Batman series. He went pow, whap, bam.
Yeah. Awesome.
So truly
and
awesome.
Cindy said earlier tonight that Silver Surfer is the best surfer.
Ooh,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So. I think he's the only surfer in comic books in terms of that. But,
okay.
All right. So, yeah. But, right. You know, Sydney will always be my favorite Killer Croc. Figure that one out. All right. So, but we hope you guys enjoyed this unique perspective and this unique take on Marvel and DC, because we really, truly, we can't pit one up against the other because they're both so near. And you know what? Consensus says that if you look around tonight, all of us said DC Comics first.
That's true.
And here's the thing, you know, and I kind of knew it was going to go that way. And I kind of actually mentally prepared something because DC Comics, very early on, even though they are the king of the comics, they became the king of the small screen as well. very quickly. Yes, long before Marvel, you know, we had the 1970s adaptation of Spider-Man, which was horrible. The Incredible Hulk was the best, obviously, because of the storyline kept the character going. But DC Comics, 1966, we get Batman. And right there, and then not George Reeves Superman. Let's go way back to the 50s and the 40s. You know, you're going way back. And, they, you know, DC is kind of, they were there in your face long before Marvel or Atlas or Timely or any of that was there. So there you go. So DC Comics definitely
wins. Kudos to their marketing team.
Well, they,
really, that's the real hero of that story.
I wish DC could do what they did on the small screen to the big screen. I'm just saying.
Yes, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, but...
At this moment, yes,
at this,
please.
At this moment, yeah, because we need some redemption after the last couple of movies. Wonder Woman was fantastic. Use that use that as a template, yeah, if you will. All right, so, guys, so that's going to wrap us up for tonight. This is the episode 69 is coming to a close here on PopX. It's so good to be back here in 2018 and our first show back. And we are just so glad you guys were able to join us. And thanks for everybody in the chat room and just sending our tweets and messages. We love you guys, and we hope you had an amazing Christmas and an awesome new year. We know we did. And as always, if you see something exciting on the shelves or at your local comic book shop or maybe at the theater or around geek culture in general, let us know on social media using our hashtag, #YoPopX. Now, if you use it, we could use it on a future show, but it's really cool going through the hashtag archive on Instagram and seeing everybody just kind of use the tag. It's kind of cool. So, yes.
Yo, PopX. Also, we are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network.
That's true. And if you haven't done it already, what are you waiting for? Hook us up. Follow us everywhere you can find us. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, Pinterest. It's all at PopXcast. And you can send us comments, suggestions. Thoughts?
Oh.
Just say hi. You know, that's cool.
Or,
whatever.
You know.
If you want to send that to us via email, popxcast@gmail.com is where you want to send that to. And for any other future past shows, make sure that you check out our official website, www.popxcast.com. All the good stuff is there.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's all there.
Oh, that baby. All right, guys. I am Austin Burke at the Burkinator. Follow me. You guys don't have the Stardust app. I watched 101 movies last year. My goal this year is 125. So follow me on there to get my response and view on every single bag on one of them. It's 2018.
125 movies, Austin Burke?
That's my goal.
That's a lot of movies.
Wow.
All right. Well, you guys can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger, all over the interwebs.
And you can also check out my amazing friend, Mr. Mike Ippolito. He is also on the web. He doesn't really say it, but is his X at Dynamics 12, D-Y-N-A-M-I-X 12. So you can hook him up on the webs there. He doesn't really say much. I mean, we try to slap him around every once in a while. And if you give him a bagel and cream cheese. Okay.
Oh,
look at Rocket. I see what you're doing there, Mr. Bradley Cooper.
He gives his weight.
All right. And of course, I'm Joseph Burke, a.k.a. Joseph Burke Arts, all over the web. Of course, amazing. Hats off to you guys. Team PopX. I couldn't do this without these three amazing individuals, and I couldn't do it without you, our viewers and our listeners. We love you, and we thank you for that. And so we'll be back in a couple of weeks for episode 70. So stay tuned, and we will see you next time right here on PopX. So Team PopX, that's it. We're done. That's the first one of the year. It's kind of weird, right?
It started off strong.
That's a great kickoff.
It is a good kickoff.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, like football. Kicking off.
More greatness to come.
Yeah, those UCF Fighting Knights, though, hey? You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
yeah. All right, guys. Take care. We're getting out of here. Bye.
Bye, guys.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.
We'll be right back.